report, so thank you for coming to Kearney. On this particular occasion, Jane had to drive to Kearney, and I didn't have to drive to Lincoln. Anyway, may it please the court, I'm Kent Schroeder. I represent the defendant, Eric Holen, who is the appellant here today. I want to depart for a moment and commend the court for the result that was achieved, quite frankly, a very ingenious result in the original Holen v. Holen case. And I'm kind of curious, is it fortuitous that we have the same panel today?
I'd like to say yes.
Luck of the draw.
Luck of the draw. Again, like I said, I think you reached a very just and equitable decision in that case.
So why are you back, Mr. Schroeder?
Why am I here? You didn't let me finish, with one exception.
Well, okay. That's a caveat.
Now, here's the exception. I don't think the Court of Appeals back in 2017 acquired jurisdiction to change the date evaluation. The date evaluation...
The court didn't change the date evaluation.
Yes,
did it?
Yes, you did.
In the opinion, it didn't change the date of the evaluation.
It did, because you said that, you sent it back to the trial court, and you said you can either use a 2013 value for the amount of the debt, which I think was $352,000, versus the 12/31/2014 date evaluation, which was $504,000.
I think it was a difference, wasn't it, Mr. Schroeder, between a September valuation of the same year and a December valuation?
Yes.
And wasn't the issue, I mean, really, the issue that you're arguing about is there's about $150,000 that the court would, in essence, have decided was not marital. That's the difference. That's the argument here.
Well, the other problem, though, is that on December 31 of 2014, Dakota Mack had... proffered an additional $150,000 in to that operating account. On 12/31 of 2014, there was still $63,000 in there. So if you're going to compare what was in that account in September of 2014, you have to go back and look at what was in that account, a little over $1,000. You, in essence, penalized, or the judge, trial judge, in essence, penalized Mr. Holen to the tune of $30,000. And I just simply don't think it's just and equitable to have two dates of valuations. There's a case that I cited in my brief for, frankly, a different reason, but I think it is the absolute best explanation I have ever read about with respect to the purpose of assigning a date of valuation. And if you'd permit me, I'd like to read from that case. The purpose of assigning a date evaluation in a decree is to ensure that the marital estate is equitably divided. A specific, predictable date evaluation has the effect of clearly allocating the risk of any change in the value of an asset. An early valuation date sensibly assigns the risk of a decline in the value of an asset to the party in control of the asset. And because the valuation and distribution of a particular asset rarely takes place in a vacuum, a specific, consistent, and enforceable date evaluation permits the trial court to allocate all of the assets of the marital estate in an equitable and fair manner. Thus, the equitable distribution of the marital estate depends on enforcing the date evaluation expressed in the decree. The date evaluation expressed in the decree.
And you were reading from what case, Mr.
Pardon?
Porter? What case were you reading?
That's Blaine v. Blaine. 275 Nebraska 87. Date evaluation expressed in the decree of dissolution is December 31st of 2014.
Well, part That's of the problem, the Mr. Schroeder, with what you're trying to argue here is that you're arguing that this court committed some error in its opinion, which you would have needed to petition for further review to the Supreme Court, which I believe opposing counsel did, and it was denied. So.
The problem,
we can't go back and change what's been done in that opinion. So what the trial court did was, as we requested, was to look at what was the marital portion of that Dakota Mack debt and what was not, if any. And that's what the trial court did.
The problem with your position is that your opinion contained two variables. you said...
Again, you're complaining about her opinion, and we have to move forward from that.
The two variables were, goes back to the trial judge, and you either use $352,000 or $504,000. That's not a final order. So I can't file a motion for a rehearing or a petition for further review when the order of the Court of Appeals is not a final order. I mean, that's my argument. That's basically it. I think that we're...
How about let's talk about that $150,000 that the trial court determined was not a marital portion of the Dakota Mac debt. Wouldn't you agree your client did testify to that approximate $150,000 at the time of trial?
No. I do not agree to that.
I believe he testified that there was the cost of farming, there were bills payable, farming is not cheap. He talked about harvesting costs, machinery, attorney fees, living expenses, and supporting the family. He testified about that $150,000.
He certainly did. But
because
certainly,
it was at issue in the original trial.
There's certainly no evidence in the record as to what funds were expended for what. That's just a general generic description. The court's order with respect to alimony, by the way, was effective December 1 of 2014. And so where do you think the money came from to pay $1,250 to the plaintiff in this case for spousal support? Came out of that checking account, as did the house payment, as did her car payment. So I think the only answer here is to stick to the rules. And it's December 31st of 2014, which is the date.
Is it your position a person can take a loan out to pay for alimony and then that loan should be counted as marital property? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Because it sounds like that's what you're saying.
You have an operating loan. And in that operating loan, or in that account that the funds are advanced for operation, the profits from farming are also deposited in that account. So it's hard to tell. Did the alimony come from the advancement from Dakota Mac, or did it come from the profits that were in that account from the previous year? I don't know the answer to that question. No. Unless you have any further questions, I have nothing further to say.
No questions now.
Thank you.
Thank you. When you're ready. Good afternoon.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Schroeder. Jane Langenmach on behalf of Claire Holen, who is in attendance today.
And I do apologize. I did not get the name correct when I called the case, so my
apologies
to the Holens.
Happens a lot in family law cases. Your Honor, the appellant today is asking the court to review two issues, one of which was already decided by this court, and the other of which was never presented to the district court. So as I understand the appellant's argument, there are two complaints. One is that the district court didn't have the alternative of valuing that Dakota Mac debt at the $352,000 as opposed to the $504,000. I think this court's opinion very clearly gave the court that alternative. There were three issues that were remanded back to the district court to consider. One, whether to use the $352,000 amount or the $504,000 amount. Two, whether that debt at whatever amount should remain assigned solely to Mr. Holen or should be divided between the parties. And three, in light of the answers to those two questions, whether or not an equalization payment was necessary. On remand, the district court did exactly that. And I don't think this is the time or the place to challenge the decision that you made. If we were doing that, I would use my 10 minutes very differently, but I agree. I think that is something that should have been taken up on a petition for further review, and since it was not, it is the law of the case, and it is where we stand. The second issue that's raised in the appellant's brief has to do with this home federal account. And as I understand it, the argument is that there were some funds in the home federal account as of December 31st, 2014, that weren't there in September. And in reality, I have no idea if that's true. The first time I heard that argument was in this brief. After this court's decision, we had a status hearing with Judge Harder, the purpose of which was to determine whether or not additional evidence was necessary. I don't think that was on the record, but as I recall, we had a general discussion about that. Judge Harder said, I'll look at my notes in the record and I'll get back to you, and then the decree came out. After that, though, both parties filed motions for new trial, motions for leave to alter or amend. Both parties filed contempts. And we had evidentiary hearings on those issues. So with respect, for example, to the motion for new trial and motion to alter or amend, both parties were present in court. Both parties argued. There was no argument on this issue. Mr. Holand presented evidence. I think there were three exhibits that he offered with respect to those post-trial motions, and none of them had anything to do with this. So the district court was never really given that opportunity to determine whether or not there was some double counting of the home federal funds. The evidence in the original trial shows that the Dakota MAC advances did go into the home federal account. But as I think Mr. Schroeder just acknowledged, other money went in there too. We don't know if it's from grain sales or something else. So I don't know if the balance is different. The record doesn't show if the balance was different. There was no evidence on that point, and there was also no offer of proof. And even if there had been evidence or an offer of proof, there would be no way of knowing if that $65,000 really just transferred from some different account and should have been counted anyway. So I don't think that's even really properly before you. We have also filed a cross appeal. And as you may recall, one of the biggest issues in this case had to do with an option to purchase. I won't restate all of that, but I will tell you that when we had our original trial in this matter, there was no contempt that had been filed. At trial, so let me back up another step. About 6 weeks before trial, LaVon Larson, who was Mr. Holland's grandmother, sent a notice that the farm lease and option were being terminated. More precisely, I believe it said the lease was being terminated, but the interpretation by everyone was that that also meant the option was being terminated as it was part of the lease. That seemed suspect to us, but the actual evidence that LaVon Larson testified at our trial that she had in fact talked to Mr. Holand about this and that he had supported the decision to terminate the lease, that was the first we knew that that had occurred, was in our trial. The affidavit of attorney fees that shows that Mr. Holand had directed his attorney to communicate with LaVon Larson's attorney to coordinate termination of the lease prior to that actual letter, that was the first that we knew, was when we were exchanging exhibits just prior to trial. So we didn't really have an opportunity at that time to file a contempt and give enough notice for due process purposes to have a contempt finding before the court at trial. It was all happening at trial. Now, in the original trial, that didn't make any difference because the court awarded the option to Mr. Holand, which is what we were requesting, and assigned the debt to him. However, when we were back in court, I did ask the judge to alter or amend her findings to make a specific finding of contempt because the facts showing that Mr. Holand was the one who interfered with this option were all in the record. We did have a contempt hearing, and there was some additional evidence presented, and unfortunately what that evidence shows is that exactly what Mrs. Holand feared would happen is what did happen. He never stopped farming the ground. He's continuing, as far as we know, to this day, and certainly through the time of that hearing, he was farming that ground. There had been no new lease document. He was just, everything was exactly the same, except that the option had been snatched from Mrs. Holand. It seemed clear after your last opinion that the instructions were that there should be a separate lawsuit filed, which included LaVon Larson as a party, to determine, first of all, whether the option was even still in existence, and then if not, what everyone's rights and obligations would be, and whether or not it could still be litigated. And there is a lawsuit on file, and that's in your record. Unfortunately, LaVon Larson passed away in, I think, June of 2018. And so at our contempt hearing, the evidence showed that Mrs. Holand had filed a claim in that estate, but Mr. Holand had not. And frankly, it's exactly what he said he would do. I wasn't surprised that that was the case. He'd always said he wasn't going to do anything to protect her rights. But so now we have a situation where there is estate litigation going on, but Mr. Holand didn't file a claim, has now missed the deadline to file a claim, won't participate, and is still farming the land. I think that shows that the termination was in fact a sham.
A question I have, the order that you are litigating, that you're alleging Mr. Holand was in contempt of,
yes,
was a temporary order.
It was.
Okay. We've since had a decree.
Yes.
Although we sent at least some issues back.
Right.
At that stage of the game, is that temporary order still something that the court even has the ability to consider whether there's contempt of that, since a decree has been entered, although is still being litigated right. to some extent.
Normally a temporary order is merged into a decree, and in settlements we typically will provide whether or not the temporary order is merged into the decree. I mean, for example, there are times where people go to their final hearing and there is still some temporary support unpaid. And then either the decree will provide for some sort of payment for temporary support, or that is still an outstanding obligation that can be litigated. So the district court's opinion was a final order for purposes of appeal. Your order was a final order for purposes of a petition for further review. But all of those are still adjusting that same decree. And so to that extent, I believe that the district court had the jurisdiction. Now, the court didn't ultimately make this finding, but I believe the court had the jurisdiction to, could have, and should have made a finding that those actions by Eric Holand, which at a minimum jeopardized and likely eliminated the possibility of the one significant marital asset going to Ms. Holand's benefit.
The other interesting twist here, though, is that the district court judge in the original decree actually found he had violated,
yes.
wasn't a contempt matter before the court, but a finding
yes.
reached by the court. Does that complicate your cross-appeal issue here?
Well, like I said, I think what we find is that all of the requisite components of the contempt were in evidence. There was just no actual finding of contempt. And the reason that I asked for a finding of contempt was because then sanctions and damages could be appropriate. And the sanctions and damages that we were seeking was the difference between the original judgment, where Ms. Holand was to receive $160,000 as equalization payment, and the situation we have now where she's ordered to pay $133,000 of Dakota MAC debt, because it is only that violation of the anti-hypothecation order that caused that financial loss. Does that answer your question? So yes, the district court did find that it was a violation of the anti-hypothecation order, but that did not include a finding of contempt, presumably because there had not been a request for a finding of contempt. And as I indicated, that was because, you know, normally with a contempt, you file your motion for order to show cause, the order is issued, it is served on the defendant, and then there is a hearing. And the evidence that showed that Mr. Holand was primarily responsible for this activity came out during our trial, and our trial was on two consecutive days. So could the district court have found him in contempt without a request? I don't know. I suspect there would be an argument about due process.
But a lot of the reason your client was awarded an equalization judgment to begin with was because of the award of the option having $1 million value.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And both parties had tried twice to exercise that option during the marriage and failed because they weren't financially situated to do so.
I think there's an important difference between exercising the option and having the ability to exercise the option. An option by its terms lasts for a period of time. That option, if it exists, is still in effect. And perhaps they couldn't do it then. That doesn't mean they couldn't do it now. It doesn't mean they couldn't do it next year. But Mr. Holand's activity took that right away. And because he did that, and let me back up another step. When we filed this motion for order to show cause, there was a response filed. And the response indicated, I think it had acknowledged that Mr. Holand had caused the lease to be terminated, but said the reason he did that is because we had sent answers to interrogatories indicating that Ms. Holand was possibly inheriting some money as a result of the death of her father. Now, the reason we sent that is because we'd received interrogatories asking questions about alimony. You know, how much do you make? Do you expect any inheritances? And so when we had that supplemental information, we had a duty to respond and say this money may be here. Apparently, Mr. Holand interpreted that to mean that she was now going to exercise the option. Well, let's even say that's true, which it wasn't. But if that was true, that's what caused him to go out and terminate the option. It was intentionally to deprive Ms. Holand of the asset, and that's exactly what happened. And so part of the reason I'm asking that I asked the district court to consider a contempt finding and that I'm asking this court to consider reversing on that issue is because with a contempt finding, the court can consider whether or not sanctions or damages for violation of that anti-hypothecation order are appropriate and put Mrs. Holand back in the position that she would have been in if he hadn't taken these steps. It is impossible for me to believe that it is equitable for him to have done this and to get away with it.
I was just going to tell you, you're well over time.
I'm so sorry.
I was trying to find a stopping point in your argument.
I'm so sorry.
So I think
it's
now. Thank you so much. How much time did we take her over?
2 minutes.
If you would add that to the appellant's remaining rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank
Which
you.
Brings him to what, approximately?
4 minutes and 58.
Must have talked fast. You know, the plaintiff in this case and the appellee just simply cannot get over the fact that Eric Holland and his grandmother did not conspire to terminate the lease. The whole termination occurred as a result and the impetus of the plaintiff hiring a CPA to value an option that placed a value of $1 million plus on this option and testified that even if the option were exercised, they would have to hold it a year and sell the property because it was not a financially viable operation. So the impetus to Ms. Larson, who owned this farm, a pioneer farm who had been in the Larson family or her family for 100 plus years, and wanted to pass this on down to a family member, decided that she was going to take this in her own hands and terminate the lease so that that pioneer farm would remain in her name and was in her name the day that she passed away. The second thing I wanted to point out.
Who was responsible for all that debt that would have forced the sale?
Both parties. Living beyond their means. I wanted to respond a little bit to the contempt situation. There was a 2000 Court of Appeals case that was unpublished called Hoppy v. Hoppy that acknowledged that in contempt action, if the condemned or is found in contempt, then the normal course of procedure is to entertain an application for attorney's fees. But the Court of Appeals went on to say that if you're not held in contempt, there is no such thing as an application for attorney's fees that will be granted. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both, counsel. You are excused and your case is submitted. Next case.